Hey listeners, welcome back to our podcast. I'm really excited about today's chat because we're joined by Sarah Nesheim, a standout name in the world of influencer marketing. Sarah's journey is as fascinating as it's inspiring, and she's here to share it with us. Hailing from Minnesota, Sarah's story is a mix of Midwestern roots and big city ambition. She's the brains behind Crafted, an influencer marketing startup that's making waves in the industry, and she's got plenty of insights to share about the industry. In our conversation today, we're diving into how Sarah built her business from the ground up. You'll hear about the challenges she faced, the creative solutions she came up with, and the pivotal moments that shaped Crafted into what it is today. But that's not all. We'll also get a peek into Sarah's world outside influencer marketing, what keeps her motivated, and how she unwinds after a busy day, and how she juggles the demands of being an entrepreneur. So grab your favorite snack, settle in, and get ready for a fun, friendly chat with Sarah. Whether you're an influencer marketing enthusiast or just love hearing about cool entrepreneurial journeys, you're in the right place. Let's jump in. Welcome to the Ecom Pulse, your heartbeat to the world of e-commerce. I'm your host, Eitan Kotter. Join us as we meet with industry leaders, marketing experts, and the innovative minds behind the tech that is shaping the e-commerce future. So plug in, gear up, and get ready for a pulse-pounding journey into the heart of e-commerce. Sarah, how are you? Super excited to have you here. Welcome to the show.
Eitan, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I mean, we have an amazing topic today to discuss all things influencer marketing, video production, short form videos, food and beverage industry, CPGs. But let's start with your personal story because it's also a fascinating story. And I think your journey from where you started in Asia to launching Crafted, your startup, is really amazing and inspiring. So let's probably start with that. I would love to hear more.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. My life story, which I think dovetails really well into, I guess, my entrepreneurial journey and the story of Crafted is, so I was born in Minnesota, from the Midwest. My mom is a Vietnamese refugee. She escaped kind of during the war, she and her family. And when she was just 7 years old, she was kind of, she had a Methodist church take her on and her family under their wing. And she and her parents were able to build a life in the States in Minnesota. So, she met my dad and they had three daughters along the way. But I very much grew up, eating traditional Vietnamese food from my grandmother. And wow. Yeah, it's the best Vietnamese food I've ever had. I've never eaten at a Vietnamese restaurant that compares to her cooking. So every time I go home, I'm really excited to eat her like sticky rice, egg rolls, all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. So anyway. So I grew up in, what you would call your traditional, interracial household. And as a kid, I had the opportunity to live abroad. My dad's job landed us there as expats. So we lived in Shanghai for 4 years. I went to international school and we ended up living in Hong Kong for about a year and a half. And this was from the ages of 7 to 13 for me. So very formative years. And because we were overseas, we had the opportunity to visit Vietnam a couple of times and I met some of my extended family and it was an incredible trip. Probably my favorite country in the world. Of course, there's some ties there, but for anyone listening, if you haven't been to Vietnam, absolutely, make it out there. So all of this to say, living in China, I think when I was a kid, I didn't fully appreciate it, honestly. But when I got back and kind of reassimilated into, suburban Midwestern life, I went to the tail end of middle school and high school in that setting. And I was just kind of yearning to get back out into the world and wanted to flee Minnesota as soon as possible. And I think just my kind of upbringing in big, metropolitan areas overseas, brushing elbows with so many other cultures while I was there too, kind of planted that bug in me. And so I decided that NYU was my dream school. I applied early and attended university there for 4 years. And I've been in New York ever since. So I recently celebrated my 10th year in New York. So that was a big deal. You can say I'm officially a New Yorker now. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Congratulations. You're officially a New Yorker. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I've survived. So. Yes. So yeah, so went to NYU, studied media and communications, wasn't sure really what I wanted to do. I had held various internships in like the sales and marketing field. And so straight out of college, you know, I thought, you know, sales is a great way to make money. I'm good at it. And so I pursued that career. But it was, you know, it was really shortly after I entered the workforce that I realized that, you know, I think that just typical corporate optics and politics and culture, I was just really not a fit for. I think so many entrepreneurs say that, so that sounds like corny to say, but I think it made me curious to understand and learn more about what was out there. And there are so many different books and podcasts that I would consume to learn about this. I would say How I Built This by Guy Raz is one of the main reasons why I wanted to be an entrepreneur. Those stories just really have moved me. Yeah.
Nice.
Are you a fan?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, of course. Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and a few others. So, you know, I ended up kind of learning how to play the politics and worked my way up at the company for 4 years until the pandemic hit. And that's when I had an opportunity to really explore ideas. I was working from home. I had the headspace, the time, and I was cooking a lot. And so this is where that kind of, you know, multicultural experience, you know, in my heritage and also like living abroad comes to play. I was also experimenting with a vegan diet at the time. So I was just really obsessed with finding different alternatives, cooking Asian meals and really leaning into kind of my, you know, plant-based journey at home. So I would cook every single day, develop recipes. I would post them on Instagram and got me thinking because posting on Instagram was a really clunky process. So I thought, okay, I'm going to start. This is going to be my first like crack at entrepreneurship. And I'm going to start this social cooking recipe app where everyone can upload their recipes and you know, we'll do away with blogs and how clunky the SEO experience is for blogs. And, you know, invested my life savings into developing this app. And, you know, it was cool. I think I had this like test flight beta, but I truly didn't know what I was doing. Once I had the beta, I just started reaching out to people on LinkedIn to get feedback on it. Because I, again, was just kind of work like at home in a silo, didn't really know what I was doing. So I started reaching out to people in the food space, in the media space, senior people that I thought, you know, it wouldn't hurt to reach out to them cold and see if they would take a meeting with me. And I ended up getting a fair amount of meetings. I mean, that's like how I was raised in the corporate world. My first job was an SDR, cold calling, supporting the sales team. So I'm very good at that. I call it stalking, like professional stalker. Like that's my that's my my hard skill.
Let's not call it spamming, but
spamming. Polite persistence is what I like to call it. So, got a bunch of meetings, learned a lot about the world of. Like the creator economy is something that I learned about. Twitch was really having a moment in 2020 and 2021 because people were in lockdown. Sure. Somebody, you know, had taught me all about live commerce and like shoppable video, which I know you know a lot about in China and how, you know, in Asia, you know, so like it was just a booming industry, this kind of like social commerce, live commerce concept. So, you know, in my head, I'd pivoted this idea. I had this app, but it wasn't really what I wanted it to be, of course, with my very little budget. I hadn't raised any money, of course. So, you know, in my head, I was like, look, I'm going to build this Twitch for cooking, like live cooking, live shopping experience. And got through those meetings. I got connected with somebody who, an investor, who had already funded somebody else working on the same idea. And that was my co-founder. So in early 2021, I met him, and he is a second-time founder engineer. And so Todd and I have been kind of working on Crafted together for the past 3 years. So, you know, we meet, we get started. I up and quit my job with absolutely, I like to say I went to complete financial free fall because I was so excited to, you know, just like leave that past behind me, even though I really didn't have as much saved in the bank as I thought, or like I thought I had a longer runway than I did. So that was totally irresponsible. I would say like the advice I give to founders now is to hang on to your day job for as long as possible.
Don't jump out of this cliff as of yet, right?
No, especially living in New York too. I don't know what I was thinking, but you know, we made it out okay. So, so Todd and I built that for about a year and a half. You know, Todd like built this thing from scratch. And that is what I think is the difference between that idea not working out and what you've built, for example, right? Like you're already leveraging the audiences and the platforms already and just amplifying from one source to all of those, you know, touch points. We were building our own platform. And so we were dragging audiences from TikTok and Instagram to join these shoppable live cook-alongs. Mm-hmm. And the concept sounds great. And maybe one day it will, you know, it'll exist in the States, but it was so hard to get viewers. It was so hard to get enough viewers that we could transact, right? Brands were actually pretty excited about it. We had so many emerging brands interested to have their products featured on these live streams. We had influencers really excited to host these live streams because they're looking for new ways to engage their audience. But we were basically running a three-sided marketplace. And so while we had, you know, those two sides pretty much ready to go, the viewership was just not there.
Yes, but the acquisition is very, very difficult. So
it's very, very difficult. And so we were like a consumer social company, but we had also had these other players. So so, you know, the brands were really gracious with us and would meet with us and give us feedback. And you know, what they said was, look, if you can't get enough viewers, then can I have the content? I know you guys are recording it and we could use this, right? We need to be posting, you know, on our channels. And that's the light bulb moment where we were like, hey, look, we already have this influence. We already have this influencer network. We're already facilitating the match like between influencers and brands, and we can power their content engine. So Agent, seriously, overnight we pivoted. We scrapped everything that we'd worked so hard to build, and we became a UGC marketplace, really focused on recipes at first, recipe content, because that was something that we noticed was the gap in the market. Then kind of evolved to retail and influencers, and we can get into all of that. But that is the story of you know, of how Crafted was born. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. It's really amazing. I mean, the evolution of things and where it started also obviously requires a lot of, I guess, mental agility, and also from the technology perspective, you know, doing this transition very, very fast in order to adapt to a certain requirements that is probably more validated, right?
Totally. I know. I remember looking over at my co-founder being like, you are like, I'm so proud of you for not like mourning the loss of this. And he was just like, you know, we got to do what we got to do. And that's what I think he and I are really good at. We're really good at listening to the customer and taking signs to get to the right answer. And so we've pivoted plenty of times. That's the one major pivot, but you know, we're always learning and adapting, and we're obsessed with getting feedback. You know, that to us is so much more important than, you know, any like ego driven, you know, potentially ego driven decision that would be made. Yeah.
Yeah, so there is no place for ego, no place for emotion, emotional, you know, attachment to the product, or like don't fall in love with your product, probably fall in love with, like, with customer pains and customer requirements, right?
Yeah.
That's more important.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very interesting.
Yeah, we learned that the hard way, I will say.
Yeah. It's good. Now, in this also, I mean, once you've pivoted and there was a clear, let's say, product market fit, right? Still, mm-hmm. there are many, many players out there who are doing similar type of services, and
mm-hmm.
you know, they're using a variety of technology of tech stacks to do that. What is the gap that you found that you fit in? Is it like some mm-hmm. focus on your niche, you know, as discussed previously, or some other aspect of the workflow? What gap or what, you know, differentiation you're introducing in, you know, in Crafted?
Yeah. Yeah. So at the beginning, our unique differentiation was our focus on food and beverage brands. So why this mattered is because food and bev brands, especially ingredients, right? They need quality cooking content. They need creators that can create uh-huh. beautiful recipes. And there's just, while there's so many creators out there, there is just a small percentage that has the ability to develop uh-huh. recipes and cook and the food to present the food in a beautiful and appetizing way. So that was the first wedge, I would say. But, you know, food and bev brands or CPG brands primarily sell through brick and mortar retail. And so mm-hmm. again, kind of being obsessed with our customer and listening to their requests, right? They are selling, you know, at the Walmarts and Targets and Wegmans of the world, not necessarily on their brand website. And so yeah. this recipe content could only get them so far. It's just more kind of beautiful content so that when people go to their Instagram page, you know, they can see that it's legit and they can get inspired. But as far as actually kind of driving purchase, what we ended up building is a unique way for food and bev, but also any CPG brand in any industry that primarily sells through brick and mortar retail channels. We can help them launch influencer campaigns and create user generated video content with that physical brick and mortar retail call out. So we can send creators in droves to different retailers regionally or nationally, and they can, you know, go to the store, shoot the storefront, you know, shoot the product on the store shelf, and really kind of drive home for consumers that, hey, this is this awesome mm-hmm. new product I like. This is why it fits into my lifestyle. And oh yeah, you can get it at this grocery store, which we found is really powerful.
Interesting. So what you're saying that specifically for the food and beverage industries, CPG, those brands that are selling on brick and mortar stores, the way that video needs to be crafted, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is more specialization that is required, right? Some unique characteristics of this workflow, right? You mentioned the style of those creators needs to know what they are doing, whether it's a kind of mm-hmm. a recipe that they are preparing. They need to be, you know, in front of the shelf maybe for the shootout. This is one aspect, and I'm sure you also have a process to vet them, right? You want to elaborate more on that?
Yeah, sure thing. So yeah, so just kind of double clicking on what you said earlier. So the boxes that need to be checked, right? Before even one influencer can create a video like this, they need to be good. Maybe they don't need to be a food creator, and maybe this is just a snack product or a ready to drink, you know, coffee product. Or again, it could be a beauty product. It doesn't have to be food, but this creator has to make quality content. Their audience has to be aligned with the brand's target audience. Mm-hmm. They have to be in the region of the retailer. They have to be, you know, within driving distance of the actual store that carries the product, and they have to somehow get the product for free. So there's so many steps to getting this video created, and there's so much logistical back and forth. So if we were, you know, primarily supporting e-com brands, which like you mentioned, there are a lot of players doing that, it is easier to ship the creator the product. And we can do that too, of course, but mm-hmm. the logistics of getting some to the store and making sure that they're they're not paying out of their pockets for the product is surprisingly really challenging to do. And that's something we solved for. Right. And I can, you know, speak more on that, but to answer your other question about how we vet the creators. So we have a creator application process on our website, and we look for quality of the content. We look for engagement, and then we look for viewership. So hopefully, you know, a creator can cross off two out of three of those criteria. You know, you could have a huge creator, maybe, you know, 60,000 followers, but they get, you know, max 600 views a video. They're not going to be a great fit for us. Or the, you know, similar size, but they have really, really, really low engagement, or fake followers or spammers in their comments. Also not a great fit. So those are the things we look for. And we have creators in pretty much every state. So we can support, again, like really localized regional, what we call drive to retail campaigns, but also like a Walmart national campaign.
So it seems that you resolve a lot of problems for the brands, or, you know, challenges that they need to face. It's kind of a, it's not just the technology platform that enables them to access creators, of course, but it's also, it sounds to me like a white glove type of service, right? They're geographically located in the right place, right? Fully vetted creators, pricing, which is transparent and visible for everyone, and a kind of a managed service type of workflow. Did I get it right? I mean, this is the type of processes that you've actually built.
I think the managed service white glove piece really is happening on the back end, right? We on the back end are really hand holding the creators and working with them to make sure that you know, they're onboarded to the platform. Currently, we're explaining to them our pricing model. If there's an issue, you know, with the content or the product, so much can go wrong, and I've really seen it all. We deal with that, right? So that's the white glove piece, so that clients don't have to interact with the creator, which is a huge, huge value add for them, because it's extremely time consuming. It's a full-time job to run campaigns like this. But for the client experience, it's very, very straightforward. You just, I think I've showed this to you, Aiden, so I love your feedback too, but it, you know, they really just log in, they approve the creators, they approve the video drafts, and that's it. So everything else is handled on our end, on the other side.
Exactly. That's the beauty of the process that you've built. I mean, you've spent a lot of time on the back end, white glove with creators, but then for the brand, it's just easy, transparent, and quick process to implement. But there's a lot of work invested, you know, prior for this to happen, right?
Totally.
Yeah, so very, very nice. So what will be kind of a typical process for you to, I mean, for your engagement with brands? I mean, what's the usual workflows, how long it takes usually, and how long it takes to see some results from certain campaigns? I know that in some industry, it may take even months to reach some kind of a KPIs in terms of the performance of those videos over social media.
Sure. So a typical campaign for us is a new store launch, right? So a brand is launching at Target, right? And they have budget for an influencer campaign. So what we need from them to set up the campaign in our platform is to make sure that we know the store locations. If it's Target National, that's really easy, and we can just kind of use the store locator. But if it's a select number of targets, we do need that store list. We need verification from the brand that they really are in all the stores that they say they're in as well. So just make sure that, you know, distribution is on point. We need to know their target audience so that we can match that against our creator pool. And so the right creators are kind of brought to the front of, you know, the selection process. And then a typical kind of creator brief is talking points about the brand, talking points about the product, do's and don'ts, some video examples, and really just anything else high level about the product and the brand. We really encourage our clients to stick with those, you know, five things, because that will really help strike the balance between making sure that the brand gets their message across, and this brief will, you know, help facilitate content that they're really proud of and that they will, you know, leverage on their paid and organic channels, but it's still really authentic to the creator as well. So we've seen, you know, hundreds and hundreds of briefs. And so we actually help with that brief drafting process as well, just to make sure that the content that comes out of that is, you know, up to their expectations. So
What are some of the challenges that you are experiencing specifically, you know, let's say with the process, or maybe, you know, with Crafted? What are the, what's happening? I mean, maybe just some of the more broader scope of the industry itself. What are your, what are your, you know, feelings around that?
Sure. So, you know, I think it's really, we're so proud to say, hey, we're the only influencer company really focused on driving to retail and brick and mortar. But, you know, there's a reason why that is. And it's because it's so hard to prove attribution, right? So someone sees a video ad or an influencer post about this new product at, you know, Sprouts or, you know, Wegmans, Target, whatever it is. And, you know, they may, that's like the first touch point. That could be the first touch point out of, you know, 20 touch points until they finally go to the store and buy that product. It's so hard to say, you know, what actually drove them to buy, to make that purchase. So that's one thing, but then also the data is so hard to obtain. It's hard to obtain for our brands even, right? If, you know, every single campaign we do ask our brands if they saw any lift. Some brands have the data, some don't. And it really is kind of a hodgepodge. And it's something that my co-founder and I are thinking through and building towards every single day. But, you know, at the end of the day, that is impossible to do accurately. And so, you know, everyone in the CPG space, everyone, you know, knows that. So that is the biggest challenge, right? But as far as brand awareness, as far as purchase intent, those are things that we can show through the way that we measure the performance of our campaigns, and that's largely through viewership and engagement.
Yes, obviously, after an influencer has posted a video, you have access to the full analytics of that video, right? Like impression, likes, shares, whatever. And
exactly,
this data obviously you collect, and it's available for the brand. What is the typical time where those posts are reach some kind of level of matureness, let's say, in terms of, you know, exploiting the maximum from this? What is the life cycle of such a post?
Yeah, totally. So we found that 2 weeks, or I guess from the very last video of the campaign, we kind of capture the data 2 weeks after that. That's the life cycle. Typically, you know, some videos will go viral in, you know, over the course of the campaign, and that will really help kind of boost the viewership, you know, and show overperformance against our goal. But that rarely ever happens beyond that 2 week mark.
Got it. And it's all organic, right? It's all organic type of post, correct?
100%. Yeah, exactly. So all the views and likes, comments, shares, saves that we're capturing are all organic. The content is all accessible for the brand. Like the actual MP4 files are downloadable, and our clients have usage rights to the content in perpetuity. So, while Crafted is on the hook for is this organic viewership and engagement, and that's what we show for in the platform. This is something that we can talk about too, as far as like the broader industry and the trends happening, but we strongly encourage and assume that our clients are going to repurpose this content for paid to further amplify the content and get even more eyeballs at a better price point, honestly, because, you know, the CPM rates for like a meta ad campaign, it's going to be better than what you're getting with an organic influencer post.
Sure. And paid media is always more effective where there is kind of a organic success, right? I mean, you post a number of videos, you see one of them is performing very, very well. You just make the stronger and, you know, push it also with some paid media budget. That's obviously, you know, the right process. And speaking about, you operate you're talking on a daily basis with the brands, but you also talk with the influencers and creators. Okay. Mm-hmm. What do you see, like, the trends of 2024? What do you see? Yeah. What are your thoughts in terms of, you know, demand, some of the challenges, what's going on there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we are at an inflection point where crafted, you know, we have an opportunity to educate creators on, hey, you know, you may not be able to command the rates that you could in, you know, 2017, right? And so the world is going towards, you know, higher volume. The world is going towards more performance-based compensation. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, while we're successfully doing that because we have 10,000 creators in our network now, we do come across that challenge, especially larger creators who have talent agents and they refuse to work on a third party platform or like their rate is, you know, 15 grand for a TikTok and there's just no negotiation. So that is a little bit of a hurdle sometimes when you get to the bigger creators. But honestly, our focus is really on nano and micro influencers. You know, we really feel strongly that if a brand wants to work with kind of a mega influencer or celebrity level, you know, creator, they absolutely should do that and leverage, you know, that kind of trend setting figure and voice for, you know, high level awareness, putting their brand on the map. But as far as content generation, as far as tapping into niche, highly engaged audiences and making your budget stretch as far as possible, that's where nano and micro influencers, like a higher volume of those, work really, really well for brands.
By the way, those videos are usually, you know, there is like very authentic video versus a fully polished type of video. Right? Mm-hmm. And I know you mentioned that the creator needs to know what he's talking about, right? In that specific area. But what is usually, where is it going? Because I know like TikTok is more authentic kind of style. Probably longer form videos are more polished. Well, what are your thoughts on this?
Yes. So I think TikTok paved the way for super lo-fi UGC style content. And that was great, right? In 2021 to 2022, that was an awesome opportunity for brands to really leverage true user-generated content in their ads. I think, you know, there's a debate going on right now about like UGC is dead. And because it is pretty saturated, I will say, and it is kind of tired and overdone in a lot of ways. And so my opinion on this is that I think UGC is absolutely not dead. And even today, more organic, authentic, kind of unfiltered content does perform better than polished branded content. And we hear this every day from our brand. So I'm not, you know, I'm not just making that up. So I think the balance is just quality UGC. If someone's just kind of in their bedroom in low lighting talking about, you know, their favorite new sports bra, which is just something that like that I really do think is tired and overdone and lazy in a lot of ways, that is just not going to cut it anymore. So I think finding the balance between quality, right, good lighting and really like enticing close-ups of the product, that's what we found performs really, really well. But then also having the creator being someone who's relatable. Doesn't have to be someone famous, just someone who resembles the consumer. And so that provides that social proof, right? And I like to think of a UGC video as kind of, you know, taking a product review or an Amazon review and bringing that to life through a video. So doing that, but, you know, using kind of making sure that the video is higher quality and, but still, you know, authentic is kind of, you know, how to succeed. Using UGC.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, there is also the aspect of community, right? I mean, everyone wants to build their own tribe, right? And definitely food has the ability to bring people together, right? So mm-hmm. you've mentioned 10,000 creators and also your network with the brands. How do you see this community build up for Crafted?
Yeah, it's such a great question. And I know it's kind of a buzzword in the consumer and D2C and CPG space.
Yeah.
I think community is really hard to build, and I am no expert at building community. Mm-hmm. But I do think that community is the foundation, you know, to win at social media and to win and making sure that your product is resonating before even, you know, investing in influencers, right? So, you know, sometimes when I talk to emerging brands and they're like, hey, you know, our social strategy is not working. Like, we're not getting any engagement. Can you help? And I'm really upfront with them, right? Because I think we can create so much social proof for them. We can create so much beautiful recipe content, but I don't think that's going to build community. So my recommendation to them is, do you know your customer? Are you speaking to their fears, their motivators, their needs? And are you making them feel seen and heard? I think that is what, mm-hmm. that is like step zero before.
Yeah.
Yeah, investing in influencers. So we can help you scale that out, right? Once you really know how to speak to your customers and you have that mm-hmm. baseline community, we can help you scale. We can help you reach more eyeballs. We can help fuel your paid strategy. So I'm glad you brought that up because it is really hard to do. And I think making sure that internally you know your social strategy and you know your brand voice and you know your customer before outsourcing to any agency is the key. And I think a lot of brands, especially emerging brands, will overlook, even bigger brands will overlook that piece.
Overlook that piece, which is becoming more and more kind of a fundamental for any marketing initiatives.
Yeah, and it's really hard to do too because it's such a crowded environment. So community building, but then firing on all cylinders, leveraging every single customer acquisition channel available to you and testing those is really the way to figure out, you know, what lands and how to grow your business that way.
Exactly. And once you get the data and once you know what lands and then make mm-hmm. the strong stronger, try to eliminate, you know, try to, let's see, a lot of marketers trying to change things that they can't control, right? So spend your effort and budget where you're strong, make it stronger, and leverage differently in this era post-COVID when, you know, brands are reducing SKUs, reducing markets that are not profitable and trying to focus on their fundamentals, like going back to basics. Mm-hmm. Great. So what advice can you provide to new food founders and marketeers that are just, you know, starting out?
Sure. So my advice is to just put yourself out there every single day. So, you know, whether that's posting on TikTok every single day, posting on Instagram Reels every single day, or posting on LinkedIn or Snapchat, like whatever it is, you, at the base of everything you do, you have to be creating content, right? And so the only way to figure out what content is going to drive that community and drive that kind of, you know, base of consumers that actually care about your brand, which is so hard to do. Mm-hmm. You know, you really, really do have to be consistent, right? And so not only consistent in creating content for the sake of creating it, but learning, you know, being analytical and kind of marrying the art and science of content creation. And so once you have enough volume of videos or posts or whatever it is that you're telling the world to get in front of your target audience, you have enough data points to see what's working and what's not. So it really just starts with testing. This is something that you can't Google, right? You can't Google, okay,
you have to
how
do
it
I, by yourself. Yeah.
You have to do it by yourself because there is no one size fits all.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Great, Sarah. We are at the fun fact section of the episode. So okay. We would love if you can share with us, please, something that most of your professional network don't know about you.
Okay. So I think something that people don't know about me is that I once did door-to-door sales. So it was the summer between... yep, clipboard and everything. So it was the summer between... Wow. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, it was the summer between, I think, sophomore and junior year in college. And I was at home for the summer. Usually I will spend the summer like in New York with doing internship or something. But this particular summer, I wasn't able to get an internship and I was in the Twin Cities. And the company that runs this door-to-door I'm hesitant to say scam, but it was like a pyramid. It was like a pyramid scheme sort of structure where it's like an outsourced company that like that, you know, the bigger company CenturyLink is actually what we were selling. So they like license, you know, this sales force. I don't know. I honestly don't really know how it works, but but they posted this job for a marketing intern for the summer and I applied, and it wasn't until day one that I realized that it was a door-to-door job. So we would show up at we would show up to the office at noon and wear like, you know, typical office clothes, and then, you know, go through a bunch of workshops and play games because we needed to get fired up to go hit the doors. And so, yeah, so it showed up at noon and then we would, you know, carpool with a couple of people and, you know, we would all have our different territories. And it was basically like a couple of blocks that you would circle from like, you know, from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. Because that's when
knocking on doors.
That's when people would most likely.
So how was
you
it?
Know, be getting
what was
home.
The conversion rate?
It was brutal. I would say I closed at least one sale a day, which is great. It was $0 base. We only made commission. It was totally grueling, physically, emotionally, mentally, but. Yeah. I was pretty good at it. So I made a lot of money that summer and I learned a lot.
Nice.
But yeah, I think because of that experience, I'm like completely unfazed by rejection. And I think it was one of the hardest things. Until I started a company myself, I thought it was the hardest thing that I had ever done. So yeah, I'm proud of that. I think, you know, I saw a lot of people churn every day. There were new people showing up and quitting the next day, but you know, I stuck through it and I learned a lot. So,
wow, nice. It seems like you're very proud in this career episode, right? Well done. Thank you for sharing. Yes. Really, really interesting. Right, Sarah. Anything else you want to add?
No, I think that's everything. I'm really excited that we had this conversation. My email is sarah@usecrafted.com. Our website is usecrafted.com. If any listeners want to learn more about, you know, all things influencers, social media, and UGC.
Yeah. And obviously people can find you also on your LinkedIn that we will share and all your details in the show notes. I really appreciate your time, which was really, really interesting. Always encouraging and inspiring to see and hear about founders' stories. So keep going. Tenacity is very, very important. Keep trying, break things, and move fast.
Thank you, Sarah. Right
thank
back
you so
at
much.
You.
Yes,
thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us on this episode. Your support means the world to us. If today's episode has been insightful for you, consider sharing it with someone who would also benefit. Even one share can make a big difference. Looking to elevate your e-commerce game? Discover Vimi, a multi-channel e-commerce platform that will transform your business with the power of shoppable video. Visit us at vimi.net to learn more. It's vimi, V-I-M-M-I.net. Thank you for being part of our journey. Stay tuned for more invaluable insights in our next episode.